Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale.
The older generation was telling me, you want to be a marine biologist? You think you're going to be Jacques Cousteau? Well, you'll never make it, you know. But so it goes to show you, you know, sometimes you should just follow your dreams. So I guess in a way, you know, I go fishing. I love the, I'm very inquisitive about what's going on there as I'm fishing and then depicting the animals and my jewelry. I guess I am kind of a marine biologist.
That was Tom Tietze with his marine biologist story, trout rings, fish jewelry, and the artisan workshop today on the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
Hey, how you doing today? Thank you for stopping by the show. Before we get into this one, please share this episode or any past episodes if you get a chance. If you know somebody who wants to break in and learn a few tips and tricks and hear some stories, click that share button and copy that link and share it out. Thank you in advance if you've had a chance to share this episode today or down the line. Established in 1928, Deddy Flies is the oldest family-run fly shop in the country, now in their 94th season. Deddy's mission has always been to supply the fly fishing community with the finest products and services. Every fly they sell is either tied in-house or by a handful of select tires. You can head over to wetflyswing.com/Deddy, that's D-E-T-T-E, to grab your flies today. That's wetflyswing.com/Deddy. Rare Gear makes truly unique and innovative fishing gear to help you travel lighter, faster, and fish more often. This telescoping fly rod doesn't need guides and packs up small enough to fit in the pocket of your backpack. This is likely the most unique rod you've seen this year, so you're going to have to take a look for yourself. You can go to Rare Gear right now. That's R-E-Y-R. gear.com to check out one of the most unique rods right now. That's Rare, R-E-Y gear.com. Tom Tietze rhymes with pizza. The man behind the artisan workshop is here to share his fish passion story and jewelry. Tom is here to break down some of his most popular brook trout rings, some of the steelhead rings, and his spawning salmon jewelry, and some different types of metals you should be thinking about if you're in the market for a ring or jewelry. Some really interesting stuff here today. I'm excited to jump into this one right now. So without further ado, here is Tom Tietze from the Artisan Workshop.
How's it going, Thomas?
Very well. Thank you, Dave. You actually even pronounced my name correctly. Most people don't get that right.
That's right. That's right. Well, it's the, I'm not sure, I can't remember what they call those things, but when you, you know, you can't pronounce name, but somebody says it's pizza instead of tizza. You know what I love when guests do that for me because I love those. And some, one of our listeners will have to reach out and tell me what that's called. Or do you know what that's called when you do that with the words?
Oh, I don't know. I should know, but I don't.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a mnemonic device. That might be what it is. Mnemonic device, potentially. So anyways, we're going to get into fish jewelry. You've got a bunch of cool rings with like trout and salmon and jewelry, all sorts of stuff. And we're going to dig into that today. So maybe you could just take us back. I know you do a little bit of fishing out there. Maybe you just talk about how you found yourself, you know, kind of doing the jewelry. I know you did, it sounds like a long career, but how did you get yourself into fish jewelry?
Well, as a kid, I was fishing ponds around the San Francisco Bay Area which I credit for keeping me out of trouble while I was in junior high school. I was out there pretty much every other afternoon fishing for bass. And so I developed a love for fishing and nature and those creatures around the pond. And then when I was 18, I started out with a friend of mine who was cutting opals and just playing around in his garage. We found ourselves working together, making some simple jewelry. And then at an arts and crafts fair when I was, I think, 19 or so, I had a bunch of his stuff stolen from me. And I thought it was the end of the world, but I had to repay him. Actually dropped out of college. I had been thinking about studying marine biology, dropped out of college to go to work as an apprentice at a jewelry manufacturing firm, and ended up loving it. And that's how I ended up making jewelry. Few years after that, a few decades of working for different jewelers, I made a Chinook salmon ring and decided, you know, this is a really cool kind of a thing. And I hadn't seen anything like that around. So I started making some sea life oriented and salmon and trout oriented designs. And just the last, I'd say 7 years or so, I've been working exclusively for myself. And about half of my work is sea life oriented and trout and salmon especially.
Gotcha. So cool. So yeah, the Chinook, and I think for me, that was what it was the Chinook ring, or the it was salmon or trout or something I saw. And you've got kind of like a salmon or kind of wrapping around the ring. How do you get to like the art? I mean, obviously the jewelry is art, but how do you get to the point where you're actually making the fish art and making it look kind of realistic? How'd you get into that?
Well, I start by doing research on the fish. So I'm looking at a lot of images. If I'm doing a custom piece for someone, they might send me a picture of a trophy that they caught so that I can get the spot pattern similar to what's on the fish. And then I sketch around that, take some liberties as to positioning. And off of that sketch, I make a wax carving, very similar to whittling in wood. And then I encase that wax carving in plaster, stick that into a kiln, put it into a centrifuge after the wax is melted out of it, and cast silver or gold into the mold. And then it's using different jewelry tools to finish it, engrave it, set gemstones, and get it all polished up.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. And you're talking about a process. Obviously we're not going to cover the whole process today, but you're doing these rings now, and I'm not sure how long you've been doing like the fish rings, but you've been doing jewelry for what, like over 40 years?
Yeah. I'm approaching 65 years of age. So, yeah, I've been doing it for a while but yeah, the fish rings, I started about 25 years ago, but seriously, really the last seven. And I make different species. One of my favorites is brook trout. They're just one of the most beautifully marked fish. And, they almost look like some kind of a tropical fish. They're amazing to me.
Yeah, that's right. And if we wanted to see the brook trout, this ring, is this on a ring? Could we go to your website and take a look?
I've got it on artisanworkshop.com or my Etsy page, which is Sea Life Studio. So either one of those, you can view them. But I have other things besides what's there. In fact, I customize these pieces oftentimes for wedding rings. There's a lot of men that won't wear a regular band, but I'll tell you what, they'll wear that Chinook ring as a wedding ring. So
that's right. How does that feel when you got people out there wearing, you know, I could just imagine the jewelry, that's cool, but you literally have somebody wearing a wedding ring, something you created. How does that feel for you?
I get a kick out of it, and it's meaningful to me. You know, that's the personal connection for me. To me, jewelry isn't just a product or a commodity. You know, I think it needs to tell a story and be part of somebody's its life and mean something special. So I really love that when I meet people that have purchased my things. And oftentimes now, if I'm at an art show or something, I run into people that come to my display that are actually wearing one of my pieces. So I get a kick out of that.
Yeah, that is cool. So what is, out of what you do, you said the brook trout is one of your favorites. Are there some other ones that are either kind of you see sell more frequently or some of your other favorites?
Yeah, I make a two salmon and a two trout ring that shows two of them close together spawning. So they're swimming very close with each other, and they're on the band in the back is a gravel bed pattern.
Oh wow!
And those are something that's very people love those for wedding rings. And then the other thing that I do with a lot of these is I will set a little gemstone into the eye, like a diamond or ruby or emerald, and I find that when you put an eye in it, it really brings it to life.
There you go. So now you can add, and what does that custom process look like? So if somebody comes in and they see a ring that looks cool, maybe it's one of these spawning pairs of trout or salmon. What does that look like for you? How does somebody walk through that process to get something more unique for their partner?
I work with them. I interview them about what they're looking for, because in general, people just have a vague idea of what they want. And once I get a general idea about, for example, what kind of metal they would like, what price range, what species, etc., then I make some sketches, email them to them, and work back and forth until we get it close to what they would like. Then I'll make the wax model and send them pictures of that and get that approved before I actually finish it. It's a very collaborative process. A couple of years ago, I had a fisherman from the Chicago area that fishes for the Sea Run Browns there. And he had quite the picture, various photos of the browns, and I worked back and forth with them to the point of getting the spot pattern just so, and I cast it in rose gold, which looks a lot like a brown trout, and that was a cool piece. I think I have a photo of that on my website.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll take a look. So basically you do a little interview, so if somebody's coming in, they would look you up, call you, or submit a form or something like that. And then how many times back and forth might you go, you know, between for somebody to get it just right?
Depends on the person, but I'd say average is probably three or four times in discussing it, shooting pictures back and forth, and getting the wax approved.
That's cool. And talk about, you mentioned the different metals. What are the examples of different metals you might use? Say, let's just stick on that wedding ring idea.
Well, for wedding rings, it's mostly gold, but I now do quite a few pieces in one of the new space age silvers. The silvers that are available now are really cool. There's one that's alloyed with germanium. Germanium is a metal that's used to harden ball bearings, and they've found that if they combine that in small amounts with silver, that it doesn't tarnish, and it's also harder than standard silver. And then there's my favorite is called Continuum Silver, which is alloyed with palladium, and that's as hard as gold. So it looks like silver, but it's as durable as gold. And both of those silvers are a lot less expensive than gold, but more expensive than regular silver, but quite affordable and durable. So I like working with that.
Gotcha. So gold. So basically you have gold as the standard, and does the gold cost a little bit more than if you're to do the continuum with the other silver types you're talking about?
Yeah, I'd say the average wedding ring in gold is between $1,000 and $2,000, and that would be with some gemstones also. Continuum silver is more in the $400 to $800 range, and the silver with the germanium that I mentioned first runs in the $200 to $400 range.
Bear Vault keeps wild adventure going and assures your next backcountry trip stays memorable, epic, and safe. Bear Vault builds a rugged polycarbonate locking canister that keeps bears and other wild animals away from your food. This in turn keeps your food safe, keeps bears safe, and keeps you safe. I've got a super funny classic story I've told a few times over the years of the bear stealing my backpack. I left, we were out on a stream fishing for sockeye. I left my backpack on the bank, and when I came back, it was gone. Left a few nuts in the pack, and I lost my backpack that day. If I would have had that Bear Vault, that definitely wouldn't have happened. So there's a good reminder for you and from all levels that if you're out there hiking around the bears, if you're out in the woods, you want to keep your food safe and keep the bears out of your camp, the Bear Vault can do it for you. And you might not realize this, but this type of thing happens all the time, even to experienced outdoorsmen. The great news for us now is we can experience all the great stuff on these remote trips without the worry. Sleep soundly knowing your vault has sealed the deal for you. The Bear Vault also has some great bonus features like see-through sidewalls so you can find what you're looking for quickly, and a wide opening for easy access. And it doubles as a camp stool. Add a Bear Vault to your backcountry fishing trip today. Check in with the crew at Bear Vault. That's wetflyswing.com/Bear Vault. You support this podcast by clicking over to check out Bear Vault. Okay, back to the show.
And so basically those dollars there are for like a completed, are you talking about a completed ring if they're getting gold versus silver?
Yeah, that's a completed piece, start to finish.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I also have a lot of pieces, and most of my sales are just orders straight off of my website or from. And there's a lot of other sea life jewelry on there, too. But you'll see quite a few of my salmon and trout pieces. I have a grouper in there also. So I make a variety of different things that are ready-made. And so my things are either ready-made like that or they're customized. So I work off of a mold that I already have that's just altered a little bit to personalize it. And that's less expensive than a full custom piece, or it's a full custom. So it's those three categories.
Gotcha. So you do a little bit. So yeah, a lot of the sales just come in, they see a ring, they're like, boom, they get it through your website. But you do a little bit of custom as well. So if somebody wanted, like you said here, if somebody wanted to get is it Continuum Silver?
Yes.
Continuum. Yeah. So if somebody wanted to get that, they could work with you, talk to you on the phone, get the right species, maybe get the right patterning. Let's just take, for example, we're going to do a steelhead. So if we're going to do a pair, have you ever done any steelhead?
I have. Yeah. So I do this one of two different ways. If somebody likes a ring that they see, but it's not the right species, I can actually sometimes start with that mold, alter it, recarve it, change the tail, the kype, etc. on it, and create the species that they're looking for. And or I start from scratch and carve a brand new one.
Right, or a brand new one. And what is your process? So the whole process, you mentioned a little bit of it, of going through the wax and stuff. What does that take you? Let's say somebody has a brand new species you've never done before. Let's say, well, there's the first question before we get there. So are there any, like, what if you get some random species you've never done before? Do you dig into that as well?
Actually, I really like that.
Okay.
And I do, sometimes it goes as far as doing an inlaid body where it's made, where the body is made out of opal. And then the fins and all of that are the metal. So yeah, I do some really kind of sculptural pieces that are whatever species people are looking for.
There you go. That's cool. So you can do pretty much, you can do anything. And that's what sounds like the cool thing about this is, although people could buy straight from your website right now, the customizing seems like the really cool thing, that you could get something really unique. And and exactly like you said, the steelhead would be one thing we could, you know, you could do.
And that's something that I actually enjoy the most. You know, when I have a mold of something already, it's a bit more of production work, and I don't get as much of a kick out of that as creating something brand new.
Yeah. And talk a little bit about your, so we got the rings. We're talking a little bit about the rings here. You've also got necklaces. Talk about all your, like, the artisan workshop, you know, your website. What else do you have there? Do you have, like, everything? Or what if somebody comes in and says, I want a nose ring or something? Can you do a little bit of everything?
No, that's a new one. I haven't done a nose ring yet. But yes, I could. I'd have to research a little bit there. But yeah, I do a little of everything, actually. My background is as a custom jeweler for different jewelry shops, fine jewelry shops. So, for example, in San Jose, I worked for Spectrum Design Jewelers, which does some pretty elaborate custom work. I was there for about 10 years. So, and here in the Portland area, I've been working for different shops. So my background is pretty thorough. I'm kind of a generalist, so that mm-hmm. I can do pretty much everything, including platinum work.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And if there's something that I can't do, for example, I don't do CAD. And that, there's a big trend right now towards CAD-CAM work in jewelry. So if I have a piece that works out better in CAD, I farm the modeling.
Gotcha.
Out. Yeah.
What is CAD?
Well, it's CAD-CAM, computer-aided design.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that they mill it out with a printer, with a CAM printer. And what I find with a lot of that jewelry is it's still a bit mechanical. It's not quite as organic mm-hmm. and as alive, I feel,
yeah,
as handcrafted things. And to me, the handcrafting is important. That's kind of an art that's being lost now more and more. And that's really a shame. So that's one of the reasons why one of the aspects of what I do right now is I train jewelers in that craft. I recently took on an apprentice. I swore I would never take on an apprentice, but I finally decided, you know, I got to pass these skills on. I'm turning 65. I think the last quarter of your life or so should be spent passing on what you know. And so I work with other jewelers and teaching them this craft. So that's a big thing to do now.
That's cool. How did you find, I'm curious on the apprentice, how did you find that person? Because I know there's probably people listening right now who do a lot of cool stuff in the arts, and they're probably thinking, wow, this would be a cool thing to learn about. Well, first answer, how did you find your current apprentice, or are you also looking for other people to connect with you?
Well, the nice thing is, since I teach jewelry workshops, when I'm working with a student, I see what skill level, what drive, you know, I get to know their personality and see how that would fit. So my latest apprentice, Jamie, she was just a natural fit. She's got the skills. She's got the vision. And that makes all the difference. And you don't have to try them on as an employee, which can be a very frustrating experience. People are not necessarily what they look like on paper. And so since I've worked with her, I found that out. I'm not looking for another additional apprentice, but I do offer those workshops. So if there's somebody in the general area that's interested, they can look me up and we can arrange it.
Okay, perfect. And those workshops, you are doing those, are those all in person, or are you doing some stuff virtually?
I'm doing everything in person. I was going to try to do that shift during COVID, but I'm so glad to just get back to the bench and do it there. It's
yeah,
more difficult to do that virtually.
Exactly.
And in person, it's also, you know, you can purchase a course. It's probably similar with, say, fly tying. I mean, if you watch something on YouTube, it's different than having an instructor there and say, oh, you know, you're holding this a little too tight, or why don't you wind this a little closer, and so on. You know, you can kind of direct people individually into what they're working on, and it works out better.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I think that, yeah, it's interesting to say we've had a couple of fly tying kind of gurus on. Tim Flagler was one on a recent episode, and we talked a little bit about that because he does some classes, and he was actually saying a little bit differently there that on fly tying, obviously having a one-on-one is definitely the best, but he was saying that sometimes with videos, because he does such a good job with his videos, he's a videographer and stuff, that he could zoom in on every part and have multiple stages. So he thinks that people actually with his stuff learn better seeing his videos than they do. And the other cool thing is the reach, right? Imagine one video or one course you could reach, you could scale it. But it sounds like you're not really thinking about scaling yours necessarily. You love the one-on-one stuff.
I do. And I'm kind of that way with everything that I do. I'm not really looking at scaling my jewelry business. I like the pace I'm going at, and I'm not looking at mass producing things, mm-hmm. Now, when I teach workshops, I teach up to 3 students at a time. But I'm finding that I've taught many classes that had 10, even 20 students, and they just can't get in close enough to really see what's going on. So I get your point about the zooming in. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Okay. Well, I think we have a decent feel for what you do. What else would you like, if somebody was coming in, if they were listening right now and they're like, okay, this sounds interesting, a new ring, some new jewelry. What would you recommend? What's the first steps if they want to check out what you have going?
Well, I would say visit the website, check out Etsy, because I have more pieces on Etsy for sale. On my website, I have a larger catalog of things I've done in the past. So if they take a look at that, or actually if they've seen something somewhere or have pictures of jewelry or rings, I can use that as a starter also. And then they can email me or call me and just get the ball rolling, ask a couple of questions, and I'll guide you through it. So it's... I like to make people feel comfortable. I'm pretty easy to deal with, and that first step can sometimes be a bit intimidating, And also the other thing is that there's really no obligation. The first few talks and a rough sketch, I don't charge for that.
Oh, that's cool.
Once I have an idea of what we're doing and then I'll do an estimate, and then we'll do a serious sketch that has a lot of detail to it. And I spend quite a bit of time showing it from different angles, and then we take it from there.
Jackson Hole Fly Company might sound like a new brand to you, but they've actually been designing and manufacturing fly fishing equipment and flies since 1978 at their home base in Wyoming. In 2020, they launched jhflyco.com and started selling gear online directly to anglers all over the country. You can go ahead and take a look at their huge selection of fly rods, reels, lines, accessories, and thousands of fly patterns, all at great prices. I've been loving the new Jackson Hole Fly Sling recently, along with the rod, and excited to dig into a few more trips and share some pictures of me on the water with the sling pack. Definitely had to retire the old vest this year, so I was excited to dig into the sling. Just like Amazon, they'll ship everything directly to your door, saving you money and time. But unlike Amazon, you'll be supporting a great shop and this podcast simply by grabbing a few items. Go ahead, take a peek at what Jackson Hole has going right now. That's jhflyco.com/swing. Get free shipping on all orders over $50 right now, and you get 25% off your first order. Go to jhflyco.com/swing, S-W-I-N-G, to get 25% off right now. Check it out right now. You support this podcast and Jackson Hole Fly Company by clicking over through that link. Okay, back to the show.
Yeah, no, I get a good feeling about how you do it. I like how it's more... more casual, easygoing. It sounds like we'll see from this episode how many people, you know, maybe we'll get you overloaded here, but we'll do our best to send a few people your way. But I'm curious on, I want to switch a little bit and go just a little bit back into your history, because I know you've got a little bit of an accent there. I'm curious about that, kind of where you came over from. It sounds like you maybe were here early as a kid, but Jacques Cousteau, I know, is a big influencer, and he was a big person that I remember as a youngster, and probably some younger kids probably don't know about Jacques. I'll use this opportunity to put a link of a video to Jacques Cousteau in the show notes. But tell me about Jacques. What did he mean to you, as you know, from what he did?
Well, I was really inspired to become a marine biologist by watching his episodes. He was kind of the father of marine biology in a way, at least in popular culture. And forget what the name of his boat was. He had this.
Oh, right. I can't remember.
Yeah. He had this weekly TV show. And I found it absolutely fascinating. I ended up not studying marine biology, but I almost wished I had, because if I had done so in the 1970s, I would have been that first crop of marine biologists that ended up becoming very kind of the groundbreakers in that whole field. But during that time also, the older generation was telling me, you want to be a marine biologist? You think you're going to be Jacques Cousteau? you'll never make it, you know. But so it goes to show you, you know, sometimes you should just follow your dreams. So I guess in a way, you know, I go fishing. I love the, I'm very inquisitive about what's going on there. As I'm fishing and then depicting the animals and my jewelry, I guess I am kind of a marine biologist. Mm-hmm. But as far as where I'm from, I was born in Germany. I grew up there, was born in Cologne, lived in southern Germany, moved here when I was 13. But in Germany already, I remember being really fascinated with the idea of fishing. But in Europe, it's a bit more difficult because the waters are many times spoken for, you know. They're hereditary waters, as they have hereditary hunting rights also that go back hundreds of years. So for every municipality, every township, you have to have a separate fishing license and so on. So it's a bit difficult. At least that's the way it was back then. Maybe it's changed now. But anyways, I came over here, and right away, moving to California at the time, that's one of the first things I wanted to do. I wanted to go fishing. I read Ray Cannon's How to Fish the Pacific Coast. That really got me inspired to fish back then. And then we had these ponds around town. Interesting story. There was a little creek that ran through San Jose. So it goes through this industrial city into the bay by Alviso, which has a huge garbage dump. So this is not your glorious river. It was a drainage ditch. One winter, the flood control berms washed out. I paraded down there with my fishing pole and a spoon on it, thinking, well, you know, steelhead and salmon might come up here. And I caught a salmon, you know.
Oh, wow.
So these experiences really egged me on and formed me, and that's
wow. That,
what I'm still enjoying.
Do you remember, was that a Chinook salmon? Do you remember what species?
You know, I didn't know that much about it back then. Looking back now, I think it was a coho.
Coho.
I think it was a small coho. It was very red, so it was ready.
Yeah.
Definitely ready to spawn. It was very interesting.
That's cool. What was it like when you came over? I can imagine at 13, you know, that kind of a amazing, you know, it's a crazy time for some kids. But, I mean, moving over here, what did that feel like when you got over to California in you know, that first year?
I absolutely loved it. In Germany, the weather is similar to the Northwest. And a lot of gray, a lot of rain. And we came over in March and drove down from the airport, this wide highway and this boat of a car instead of our little clown cars in Europe. And the air was balmy. And the next morning when the sun came up, we saw palm trees. And I thought,
amazing.
I thought I was in heaven, you know. So, I really enjoyed it. Being a teenager was a bit of an adjustment. It was inspiring to me. So, and the outdoors, the possibilities here in the States are just much more extensive than they are in Europe, where everything's built up.
So right.
You have to travel to Europe to get out into nature.
That's right. How'd you get up? How'd you move from California? What brought you up to Oregon or Portland?
Well, loved it. I met a woman, moved up here 17 years ago now, 18 years ago, and was married about, 16 years ago now.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah, yeah. Her name is Jeannie. She is now a retired English teacher. I've got two grandkids now, three and a five-year-old that I took fishing for their first time this last summer. So that was exciting.
That is exciting. Did you make the ring for Jeannie?
I did, yes. And yeah. She still kicked me about this because I finished it the morning of our wedding.
So, oh, wow. Yeah. what was the, describe that ring. What could you describe? Was it like we're talking about a gold ring? Or?
Yeah, this one is different. It's she loves Art Nouveau and Art Deco style jewelry. And this is an Art Deco ring that I designed that has white gold and rose gold in it with small little diamonds. And it's a really cool design, nothing having to do with trout or salmon.
Gotcha. Gotcha. No, that's cool. Right on. This is cool, Thomas. You've got a cool story here, and it's inspiring. And because it sounds like you would be a cool person to connect with, and hopefully some people listening, you know, will head your way. And I know there's some people in the Northwest, so you might even get some new apprentice, somebody listening right now who's interested. So we'll have to see how that goes, and maybe you could let me know if that happens down the line.
I will definitely tell you. A couple more things.
Yeah.
Anybody that purchases on Etsy or on my website something that's in stock, for the first year, I'm going to make a donation of 20% of that price to Trout Unlimited. And then I wanted to mention a little pointer. I went to the 50th anniversary symposium of the International Fly Fishers in Bend a couple of years back. And I had a display there at the trade show. And I saw the competitive fly tires there. I found that really interesting. And that got me thinking, you know, a person could actually use little gemstones in their designs, and they're not necessarily expensive. For example, you could use, I have these little tiny cat's eye moonstones that have a cat's eye traveling across it, similar to a tiger's eye. I don't know if you're familiar with that gemstone, but so they're tiny, about 3 millimeters or so. And you can tie them in by using a little burr, say from Harbor Freight. You can score a little line around the circumference of it, and then tie that in with wire or thread. So you could create some cat's eye eyeballs on your pieces, or, you know, you can do that with other cabochon type of gemstones. Not the faceted ones maybe, but definitely cabochons. So I thought that might be a cool interface between jewelry and fly tying.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that would. I think that's something maybe if somebody's interested, they could, you know, give you a call or check in with you more and find out more information on that. Is that something, could we see anything like you're talking about there? Or is that something new that you're just thinking about?
I don't have any pictures posted of that, but I could post something on my website. I think I'll go ahead and do that. By the time this podcast airs, I'll have that posted.
Okay, good. Yeah. Good, yeah. And we'll, and where would we set? Can we create a, let's see, I could just make something right now. I'll make a link to direct them over there. We'll just call it, now you're talking about the cat's eye, right? Is that, how would you describe this, this thing you're talking about here?
It's a semi-translucent stone, so it's kind of silvery looking. It's kind of like frosted glass in appearance, except bright. It's got a high dome to it, but it has this line of a bright reflection that travels as you turn it. That that's why they call it a cat's eye. So it's a really cool look. Not that that necessarily would attract fish, but it might attract fishermen.
That's good. Okay. Well, let's. I'll put a link out at wetflyswing.com/cat's eye, and we'll put a direct one to this when you get that up. I'll put a link out to that, and then everybody can just go in the show notes and take a look at your website, obviously. But we'll try to direct them to there more specifically. Before we get out here, I want to check just on overall. It sounds like you have tons of knowledge, you know, years and years of all of this. If somebody other than what you have going, which sounds like that's a good start, say you, they didn't have, you didn't have enough room for somebody to get in, where else would you send somebody to learn more about kind of this, kind of the artisan type jewelry? I mean, there must be thousands and thousands of websites. Where, like, did you have a mentor, or what do you tell somebody if they ask you that?
Yeah, I had multiple mentors. There's two things that I encourage people to look at. If they're local here in the general Portland area, the Multnomah Art Center is great for classes. So they have beginning classes there.
Cool.
And then if somebody is interested in learning about online courses and such, there's two resources. One is riogrande.com, and they are both a provider of tools and parts for the jewelry industry, and also they have a vast catalog of resources of teaching tapes, videos, etc. And the other one that's a great resource for budding jewelers is ganoxin.com. That's G-A-N-O-K-S-I-N. And that's a vast network of jewelers that mentor each other. And they have a large catalog of classes available through that also.
Oh, there you go. And the first one was Rio. Was that, can you spell that one, the first Rio? Was that Rio Grande?
Yes, Rio Grande, RIOGRANDE.com.
Oh, perfect. Okay, great. Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. So we'll put links out to those in the show notes. And then, like you said, the just art centers, that's a, another more general place people could start. So, okay, Thomas, well, in the next kind of year, you've kind of alluded a little bit of this, but anything else you want to give a shout out to you have going with yourself, either the business or personally, you want to give a heads up on?
Yeah, I'm kind of excited. We're going to take a road trip out to Montana this year, just a family vacation, but I'm going to take a pocket full of my trout pieces with me, and I'm going to see if I can connect with some galleries in Montana, maybe Whitefish or something, and see how that goes. Maybe if some of your listeners have some tips, or maybe someone owns a gallery or fly shop up there, I'd love to stop by and take a look at that. I do sell through some of the local coastal galleries here in Oregon, and I do art shows in the in Oregon and Washington, and that's always a blast for me because I love that personal connection. You know, if you're just doing online stuff, you kind of lose touch with that. It's to get that personal feedback, I think, is just all important.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great idea. Yeah, I think the fly shops is a great example. If you can get your product out there in some of these local fly shops, I could see that as a hot item, you know, sitting right there next to the cash register, you know, some cool rigs, some cool fish jewelry. And hearing the story, that's the cool thing, right? Is this isn't just some cheap knockoff thing, you know what I mean? This is something that you spent your life crafting. And the customization is also a huge, right? That's amazing.
Well, it's all in the details also. There's a lot of, you can find some cheap silver jewelry out there, but you can tell the difference. I think it makes a difference when something is handcrafted versus pumped out by a machine.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's great. Well, Thomas, this has been a lot of fun today. I will send everybody out to artisanworkshop.com if they have questions for you. And yeah, thanks for everything today. This has been really cool giving us, this is definitely a unique episode. I think we've had some artists on, plenty of artists. In fact, we had Ray Troll on, who's a kind of a famous fish artist too, that does some cool stuff. But this is the first jewelry artist we've had. So I want to thank you for coming on today and sharing your wisdom here.
Well, thank you, Dave. I appreciate the opportunity, and I'm thrilled to be on your show.
So there you go. Show notes, links, and everything else, wetflyswing.com/312. 302 will get you the good stuff. Before we get out of here, I want to let you know you can subscribe to this episode, wetflyswing.com/subscribe. Check it out right now, and you will get updated when that next episode goes live. And that next episode is going to be a good one. We've got Taylor Streit, all the way home from New Mexico, is here to share a little bit of the behind the scenes in that unique state. Really cool episode. This is definitely a fun one. Hope you get a chance to check it out. Click that subscribe button. You'll get updated and you'll hear this next episode when it goes live. All right, I'm going to let you get out of here, and I hope you have a good night wherever you are, a good day or a good afternoon, and looking forward to catching you online or maybe on the water.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.